Hi, and welcome to the Should Be Known podcast. I'm Clayton Pixton. Welcome here. That is just a little chord progression. I stole it from somewhere. I didn't come up with that, but you know, chord progressions, there are only so many. So welcome here. And today we're going to talk about several different things. So if you've been listening, and if you haven't been listening to this podcast, it's an investigative podcast. It's not one where I'm coming and telling you all the things I know or acting like I know everything. It's one where I'm asking a lot of questions, and what we're trying to find out is what causes depression and anxiety. Those are some at least short-term goals. Maybe they should be long-term, but that kind of seems to be what we're doing right now. The original intent of the podcast was to be somewhat broad, as you can see from the title, it should be known. It can encompass whatever we want, but that's kind of what we're doing right now, is this depression and anxiety thing. And it's a big mystery. It's a big problem. It's kind of hard. It involves a lot of things, and it involves principles of philosophy and psychology and some things which are talked about and some things which aren't, partly because psychology wants to be a science, a physical science, but psychology is spiritual to me. And so there's a little bit of a disconnect there. Anyway, I hope you've been enjoying the podcast. I certainly have. I've been enjoying it immensely. It's fun for me. So we're going to go to my notes, and I'm just going to do my best to get through them. There are a number of different topics here. To start out, I was listening to the Car Parts episode, which was a really good one, I thought. And I think we'd need to take more seriously the idea that we actually explain how something works, like depression and anxiety. What we do is, various guys have come up with theories, guys and girls maybe, and we talk about those theories and how those theories try to account for everything, but none of them really do. And I think we know that. I had a psychology book one time that said, way in the end of the book, after it had discussed all these theories and how they attempt to explain everything, it finally said, like almost as a footnote, yeah, the authors believe that all these theories have something to offer in explaining how these things work. And that if you, fuse them together, they can help explain stuff. Something like that. And it was just, that was it. But nowhere else in the book did anybody ever try to explain, well, so this is how it works, and this is how these things do work together. It's like, come on, guys. Is this the best we can do? Just talk about isolated theories and how they try to account for stuff all by themselves? Behavioral theory, cognitive theory, family systems theory. I don't have them very well on the top of my tongue right now. Freud's theory. It's hard to believe we're still talking about him in a serious way. You know, all these theories, but they can't all be right at the same time, or they can't all explain the whole thing at the same time. And that's what the Car Parts episode was kind of meant to explain. There are different principles that are acting at the same time that cause different parts of the car to operate. And together, they make the car go. And in the same way, depression and anxiety are a kind of a complex mechanism that have various principles making them go, not just one. And that's why we talked about also the little analogy of the elephant, where a bunch of blind guys are trying to describe an elephant, and they all, you know, are able to feel a different part of the elephant, the foot, the tail, the trunk, the tusk, whatever. And they all say, well, this is what describes the elephant. And it's, no, that's what describes that part of the elephant, but the whole thing, you got to back up a little bit. So the same way with depression and anxiety, you got to, and psychology in general, you got to back up. You can't take one of these insights that these guys have and think that that explains the whole thing. And we need to take that more seriously, I think, and make some attempts to explain how it all works. Okay. So I was reading my scriptures the other day and thinking about agency and how we have the ability to act for ourselves and act on good and evil. And I just wanted to share what I thought on that. So everything that has knowledge has the ability to act according to that knowledge. I've thought before how, and the scriptures to me seem to make this somewhat plain, that our agency exists because of the knowledge we have of good and evil. That's how it exists. And as a matter of fact, and this is the insight that I had the other day, all the ability we have to act is based on the knowledge we have. So a gnat has knowledge. You know, a gnat is a little teeny-weeny fly, smaller than a mosquito. And that gnat has the ability and the freedom to act on its knowledge. But it and all animals, beasts, don't have a knowledge of good and evil. They don't have that knowledge like we have. So they can't act on that. We can, because we have that. Beasts can act on other things. They can act upon us, just not as it pertains to good and evil. We can act on them as it pertains to good and evil. A rock doesn't have any knowledge, so it can't act. If it had knowledge, it could act. But it doesn't. It can only be acted upon. Those are my thoughts on that. So how we get our ability to act is by our knowledge. We were given a knowledge of good and evil in the Garden of Eden. Before that, Adam and Eve didn't have it and were therefore like children. I don't know if they were the same as the animal kingdom or if that's going too far. But for sure they were like children. And children can't act pertaining to good and evil only insofar as they understand good and evil. And I don't know exactly how that process happens or how long it takes and when they start to know good and evil and when they end and they totally know good and evil. It's not totally clear to me, and it's not necessarily important for this discussion, but we know that little children don't have a knowledge of good. They don't have a knowledge of good and evil, and that's how they can't sin. Isn't that the case? The power isn't given unto them to sin, only as they become accountable before God. And they become accountable before God as they gain that knowledge of good and evil. Okay, that's that. So, speaking of Adam and Eve, I was thinking about this self-reflection, right? Because we talked about depression and how depression is like a failure to forgive yourself, just as you would become sick and stuff if you fail to forgive another for something serious or for something not serious. But it can be serious enough, the whole situation can become serious enough that you become ill. Physically ill. And I was going to look in Terry Warner's book to see where he describes that. And I haven't quite found it yet. I started looking, but I didn't quite get there. And some other thoughts about that book too, but they're not fully developed, and so I'm not going to go there right now. But so we talked about depression and how it's the failure to forgive yourself, just like it's a failure to forgive somebody else. And that implies, right, that you can treat yourself kind of the same way you treat somebody else, like we're almost separate from ourselves. So I was exploring that idea, and here's my notes. Adam and Eve must not have had self-reflection before the fall, before they partook of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. They didn't know they were naked before, and then all of a sudden they knew they were naked. They could see themselves from another person's point of view. They could see themselves from outside themselves. They could imagine what they looked like from another person's perspective. They became, in a word, self-reflective. And it all happened, by the way, when they gained a knowledge of good and evil. And I'm not sure how that's linked. I don't know how having a knowledge of good and evil all of a sudden made them self-reflective and they could see they were naked. But we have the time correlation, I feel like. I'm not sure what the mechanism is at this point. Some more thoughts regarding that. It had been given unto them to choose before they transgressed. They had the commandment not to eat of the tree. It was forbidden while they were yet childlike and innocent. Only after they made the choice to transgress the commandments did they gain a knowledge of good and evil. Only then did they become self-reflective and see that they were naked and were ashamed. And they hid themselves. And I think sometimes, isn't that all needed to be different about that tree of the knowledge of good and evil? I mean, was it something about the fruit itself? I don't know that it needed to be. I wonder if it just... all that had to be different about that fruit was the fact that God forbade it. And the minute they decided to partake of that fruit, that's when the knowledge of good and evil came to them. That was the one commandment that they had that kind of they could break. I'd have to think about that. You know, it's something like that. I'm not sure if that's right. All right, little break here. Where do you stop that? Where do you resolve it? I don't know. I mean, you don't want to go like this. That sounds lame. I wonder how the song goes. You'll recognize this, maybe. That's the song I think I stole it from. And it happens all the time that you, for me anyway, you play something and you realize, oh, I think I've heard this before. And you didn't necessarily come from playing the other song. That's what happens to me at least. But yeah, That's what that is. I'd have to listen to the song to see. I don't even know the name of it, to see what they do besides what I just did. How they resolve it at the end. I'm sure they have a chorus and stuff like that. All right, back to the notes here after the musical break. I just read something online that put brain chemicals at the top of the list of possible causes for mental illness. Let me say that clear. So it was saying, what are the causes of mental illness? Well, there are several things. And the first on the list was brain chemicals. And this was a well-meaning person, I think. But I really think you're trying to be nice. But I don't think you're being helpful by saying it's brain chemicals. You're the coach who tells the basketball player it's not their fault they keep missing. It's not your fault. It's in the brain. You're trying to make them feel better by telling them it's not in their control. That's not helpful. And it's not true. It's true that it's not their fault like they're thinking. But it's not true that there's no involvement and they can't do anything about it. It's not true that that's where the problem lies, guys. Ah, brain chemicals. The same website linked to another website that said this, I thought was interesting. Brain chemicals as a cause, this isn't a quote, but it's is my paraphrase. Brain chemicals as a cause is a weak argument, often meant to make it feel less personal and easier to talk about and get treatment for. Well, which website is right? Is brain chemicals the leading cause, or is the website right that says, well, brain chemicals is overplayed. It's usually done as a way to lessen the personal responsibility to make the person feel better and make it less stigmatized. Yeah, that first website had brain chemicals at the top of the list and had head trauma at the top of the list. You guys, I don't understand why people don't understand that this is a way to push it off onto something we don't understand. The same article was very optimistic that we were going to figure out how medications specifically treated brain chemical disorders in the next decade. Well, I looked at the date of that article. It was 2005. That would have been 2015. We should have made a lot of headway. And I, guys, I'm very grateful for the medications that exist. I think they help a lot of people. But I just don't think we should put too much responsibility on that. You get me, right? Okay, here's another thought, and this is a dangerous one to talk about. It is an addiction. Surely it is an addiction. Depression and anxiety are addictions, aren't they? Like alcoholism or drugs or pornography are addictions. They're a trap. They come in a continuum of from none, no addiction, to mild addiction, to serious addiction. And the more serious means the harder it is to escape. And it's a trap of the adversary, is it not? That's how addiction works. Are depression and anxiety, are they not the same? Are they not addictions? Are they not a trap? Just like addictions are a trap? I'm sure everybody's thinking, you are so mean. So mean. But it's not that, I don't think it's that I'm mean. I think you have to love everybody and understand that things happen to people that aren't their fault. Diseases happen to people. And I believe this. Diseases happen to people that aren't their fault. Diseases also happen to people as a result of their choices. But many times they come and addictions come and, well, I have to think about addictions, but many times these things come not at the fault of the person, for sure mental illness, you know, it happens to people. It happens. And before God, the person that it happens to is not condemned. You understand me? And they deserve our love and our compassion. That is all true. But, this is hard to talk about. But they're a trap, and I have to think that Satan is involved. He's involved in traps like this. Comes at no fault of the person. Diseases sometimes come at the fault of the person, right? They can. Lung cancer, result of choosing to smoke. Lifestyle factors can have a factor in diseases forming. But sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes they just kind of happen. And I believe it's the same with mental illness. But I don't know that it's right to push it all on something we can't understand when we don't need to do that, like the brain and like genetics. Why don't we do something that we can understand, like self-deception or like modeling from parents and learning coping mechanisms? Why can't that be a thing that instead of genetics somehow mysteriously explaining why behaviors go from generations, why can't we first look at how we learn coping mechanisms from our parents, from our caregivers? Why can't we do that? Because isn't that something we can understand just by looking at it and thinking about it? Is that too mean? Is that why we don't look there? Are we looking beyond the mark? I think we're looking beyond the mark. Everybody blames stuff on the brain. We want to blame everything on the brain. We don't understand the brain. Stop blaming it on the brain. Stop blaming everything on the brain. The brain is like gravitons. What are gravitons? Gravitons are a mysterious entity that nobody's ever observed. It's just a postulative thing between masses that attracts them to one another and to explain gravity, because you don't want to understand the theory of space-time. Space-time explains gravity just fine. Yeah. So let's stop blaming everything on the brain. As a matter of fact, you don't know that the brain explains it. You just think that. You realize that, right? Face it, you don't know that the brain is going to explain it. You don't know that it's ever going to explain it. You only think that. That's only a postulation on your part, and it's the same with genetics. You don't know that genetics is ever going to explain it. You're assuming that it will, but that's an assumption. It's a postulation. It's a hypothesis. And it might be wrong. Okay. Final thought for the day. I was just thinking, do we have a sixth sense? And which is kind of a silly question to me, but the answer would be, whatever you want to call it, we definitely have the ability to sense things spiritually, just like we do physically. We know we have the five senses: sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. Those are the five senses. What if we have similar senses on the spiritual side? And it's just not recognized by science, never will be. But what if we have those same kind of senses? It's more than just a sixth sense. Couldn't it be more nuanced than that? Couldn't we have spiritual eyes? Spiritual sight and spiritual hearing and spiritual feeling and spiritual taste? You know, where the scriptures talk about the word of God being delicious, and it's been said that you can taste something to see if it's right. something can taste good to you. And I'm sure there's an analogy for smell, although that one's a little weirder, but it's probably not weird. You've heard people say, this smells funny to me. It smells fishy to me. And, maybe that's it. I don't know. All right. So much for that podcast. It was fun. And that gives me the chance to continue on these things and try to understand what causes depression and what causes anxiety. Now, I feel like I had a great little helpful insight on depression where I thought of it being basically a failure to forgive ourselves, just as we'd fail to forgive another person. I really should go into that and give a little more explanation on that and take some from Terry Warner's book. I'll try to do that. But to me, that helps so much to explain what depression is. It means depression is enmity toward the self. Depression is a failure to forgive oneself. I have this friend who is really, really bad at self-talk. Like he downs himself constantly. And it's obvious. And it's clear to me that he is, he's for sure got depression. And he's for sure got anxiety. And he is so full of negative talk. He'll actually say how he's, a loser, basically. Like over and over in so many ways. And I don't know. From the outside, it looks like that's how you do it, man. That's how you have mental illness and stuff. You have this pattern of talking to yourself in these ways. And in a way, it is just a pattern, but there's more to it just being a pattern that comes out of nowhere. To me, that's the essence of depression. It's the thought that you are no good. And you can say that in many ways. I'm no good. I'm a loser. I'm bad. I'm guilty. I'm not worthwhile. I'm not worth it. God doesn't love me, or if you believe in God, and many other things like that. It's basically an enmity toward yourself. You're holding a grudge against yourself. You're not giving yourself a chance. You're not forgiving yourself. And we talked in the earlier podcast last time about how you need Jesus Christ to forgive anybody, somebody else or yourself. Okay. Time for some music again. Hard, it's killing me. Speaking of killing me, I've got a song called Killing Me. Maybe we'll do that next time for our music. I'll play my song Killing Me. It's a fun song. Okay, so that's depression. What is anxiety? If that's depression, depression is enmity to the self and all the stuff we just talked about. What's anxiety? That's the question on my mind. And we're going to figure that one out too. All right, well, hang in there, be well, and if you're not, work on it, and one day you will be. You really will. All right, love you guys, have a good day, and I'm going to try to play this thing in B again, even though it's killing me.